Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the growing humanitarian disaster following the superstorm that ravaged the Philippines, displacing more than 600,000 people. Joining us from the Philippines is Rosario Guzman, a research associate with the Ibon Foundation, which works for climate justice and on environmental, agricultural, and economic issues in the Philippines. We'll discuss the difficulties getting relief to those in need, and also joining us is Anne Peterman, the executive director of the Global Justice Ecology Project. She joins us to discuss the vulnerability of countries in the global south that are suffering from the consequences of global warming caused by the global north. Then we'll look into the face-off at a restaurant outside of Dallas, where a group of women and children had gathered for a meeting of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America that was interrupted by a posse of men and women armed with assault rifles who belonged to an organization called Open Carry Texas. A member of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, who is afraid to give out her name, joins us to discuss how the group formed after the Sandy Hook massacre, modeled on Moms Against Drunk Driving, and how they were intimidated by the display of heavy force from heavily armed gun rights activists. Then finally, we'll speak with Catherine Kramer, the daughter of Stanley Kramer, the legendary producer-director of the Cold War classic On the Beach, and actress, comedian, writer, and producer Lily Tomlin, who are hosting the North American premiere of a new film, Fallout, that explores the mythology and reality of Neville Shute's On the Beach and its relevance today to the continuing fallout from the meltdowns at Fukushima. And joining us now from the Philippines is Rosario Guzman, a research associate with the Ibon Foundation, which works for climate justice and on environmental, agricultural, and economic issues in the Philippines. And also joining us is Anne Peterman, the executive director of the Global Justice Ecology Project. So, Rosario, my understanding is that there are about 600,000 people that have been affected by this actually being made homeless by this superstorm, which I understand is called Yolanda in the Philippines. Rosario?
There's actually, first of all, warm greetings from the Philippines. Yes.
So my understanding is that there are 600,000 people made homeless. Is that right?
The estimates vary, actually, but we can put the affected people, whether they are homeless or they are wounded or probably dead, to around 900,000 families or around 4 million individuals in 41 provinces in the Eastern Visayas region of the Philippines. Right now, we cannot tell exactly the death toll and how many are rendered homeless or are just roaming in the streets looking for food and water. But the situation is being projected is like that. People are, for instance, in one village, there are 880 families. For instance, only one family has its shelter still standing. So probably we can estimate in the 900,000 families affected as, 600,000 homeless, and more or less.
Well, the president of the Philippines, President Aquino, has said that the original death toll of 10,000 was exaggerated and it's only about 2,000. But you've told us that millions of people are affected. It sounds like what you're telling us is worse than what the president is saying.
The president has mentioned the death toll, the official count of the death toll, but we fear that many bodies are still, of course, buried in the debris or in the sand or underwater, that are still, we're still waiting for the final count. But what I'm saying is that affected people can rise to 4 million because the news, for instance, the media is just reporting one city, Tacloban City, where they find lots of bodies thrown in beaches and also in the streets. But other cities in the Eastern Visayas region are also getting trickles of reports saying that the death toll can even be higher than 2,500, the official one that the president has given to the media. So we're still waiting for the final count, but as of now, we're saying that the villages and the agricultural and the farms and other areas, if we count how many families are affected in those areas, then it would be around 900,000 families.
So let me turn to Ann Peterman, the Executive Director of Global Justice Ecology Project. And you have, of course, delegates at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change meeting now in the UN Climate Conference in Warsaw, Poland. And the Philippines delegate there made a very passionate speech about the connection between the vulnerability of the countries in the global south that are suffering from the consequences of global warming, which is caused by the global north. Do you think that message is getting through to the international community, Anne?
Well, I think the message has gotten through, certainly, that, you know, there is an historic responsibility of the global north to the global south with regard to climate change. Now, whether that's going to be turned into action, I have a much more dubious outlook on, based on having gone to these UN climate meetings since 2004 and seen absolutely nothing accomplished. In fact, going backwards, from the Kyoto Protocol, where there was at least some kind of legally binding commitment, even if it was too small, at least it was something. Now there's nothing, and all the governments can seem to do is talk about, you know, continuing to talk about maybe one day having some kind of a commitment. And it's extremely frustrating and disgusting. And the corporate influence that's come in just the last few years has been unbelievable, to see these corporations coming in and just, you know, willy-nilly defining what the policies are going to be for these governments.
Well, of course, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change in Warsaw, Poland, is coincidentally the World Coal Association, and coal, of course, is the greatest contributor to global warming gases. They're also having their convention there, and the head of the UN Framework Convention is giving a keynote speech to the coal producers. But let's go back to the Philippines and Rosario Guzman. The new president, of course, has promised to clean up corruption, and so far the economy has been booming, but very little, and it has a 7.8% growth rate, which is higher than China's. So there's a sort of economic miracle happening at the same time, underinvestment in infrastructure, and I imagine the huge hit from this storm is going to make the infrastructure situation so much worse. Rosario?
That's true. If we're looking at that's right. If we're looking at the impact right now of Haiyan on the Philippines, we are seeing the adaptive capacity of the country as being very low, which means that the government has not really invested in any adaptive capacity, considering that the Philippines is visited by 22 typhoons a year, four of which are super typhoons, and yet money does not go into proper infrastructure. The new government is embroiled in a very scandalous and controversial corruption issue right now. And if you're looking at how the government now responds to relief operations, it's very slow. They're saying that the aid is coming, but the aid is not where it should be going. They cannot even leave certain ports because there are no infrastructure or no transportation equipment that can deliver the aid or the relief efforts or relief assistance. So we are seeing a government that is really hiding on this economic growth, but the growth is not really where it should be going. And what is so unjust here in the current UN negotiations in the Conference of Parties is that the Tacloban City or the Eastern Visayas has very low emissions or low carbon kind of production system. It's an agricultural region, in which it suffers the worst impact of the disaster because the government has not invested in any adaptive capacity.
And what about the enormous diaspora of Filipinos? I'm calling you, Rosario, from Los Angeles, where there is a considerable population of Filipinos in the diaspora. The country's Philippines has 10 million overseas workers, already providing the Philippines with $24 billion in remittance. And a third of the people in the Philippines live in poverty, existing on $2 a day. Is the diaspora coming through for you? Are people, Filipinos abroad, stepping up?
You mean for the disaster right now?
Yes, yes. In other words, this is a catastrophe. The government doesn't have the infrastructure, hasn't invested. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, sorry. Rosario?
Right. Well, first of all, I would like to mention also that this new government, the Aquino government, has promised to plug that valve or whatever you call it, that leads leads to the diaspora and promise to create jobs, etc. But under the new administration, the rate of the number of deployed people has increased even. So that means unemployment has even worsened, and so Filipinos are still looking for jobs abroad. Now the ironic part is that they are hailed as heroes, and now that we have the disaster, government relief is not there, but the aid that's coming in from Filipinos abroad and even from the grassroots organizations that are based here and based abroad are the ones that are really going to those who need it. So that's the irony. We send off people, and somehow they're the ones that we can rely on if a disaster like this strikes us.
And Peterman, is there a way to link the work that you're doing on climate justice with some more efficiency, let alone justice, involved in the issues that Rosario is talking about? So if we're going to have more of these disasters, surely there has to be a better and more coordinated international response. If we're going to have all these global warming deniers say that there's nothing wrong with pumping CO2 into the air and filling up your SUV, if they want to be in denial, somebody's got to take responsibility until people wake up to the obvious connections here between climate change and these catastrophic weather events.
Well, certainly, and I think there are so many different grassroots alternatives to the top-down so-called solutions that are being offered either by the UN or by the governments and so on that are out there that aren't getting enough attention, that aren't getting enough funding, that aren't getting enough anything. I mean, those are, I think, where we really can find the positive alternatives, the positive solutions, the real future. We're not going to see the governments of the industrialized countries saying, oh, yes, we're going to pitch in billions of dollars to help our, the countries in the global south to adapt and deal with these climate disasters. You saw Rafael Correa, for example, in Ecuador saying, if we could only collect, I think it was $3 billion, we could keep the oil under the Amazon rainforest and not exploit it, not put all those carbon emissions into the atmosphere. And what governments of the world couldn't even come up with that? And that was to actually directly stop climate change from occurring. So the idea that these governments are now going to be able to come up with funding to help these countries in the global south adapt and deal with these climate catastrophes that they had no hand in causing is ridiculous. In fact, they've put the World Bank in charge of the Green Climate Fund, which is where these funds are going to come through, which means you're going to see the same kind of structural adjustment programs that we've seen from the World Bank for decades now. In other words, this climate finance that these countries need is going to be held hostage by the World Bank, saying you have to sign on to more privatization, more exploitation of your resources, more things that are absolutely detrimental to your country if you want to see any financing to help you mitigate or deal with climate change. And that is exactly what's occurring, and it's quite horrendous.
And Rosario Guzman, again in the Philippines, a research associate with the Ibon Foundation, which works for climate justice and on environmental, agricultural, and economic issues in the Philippines. If the Philippines has the lowest percentage of paved roads compared to Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, Thailand, and Singapore. It also has the worst scores in other indicators such as phone lines, households with power, and electricity lost in transmission. So there is a tremendous, as we've discussed before, underinvestment in infrastructure. Is that, and that is a result, I believe, of decades of neglect and corruption. You were saying that Aquino, even though he's taking credit for economic improvement, that he is not cleaning up corruption. Is that what I heard?
Well, yes, of course. It's just unfortunate that he campaigned on anti-corruption slogan, but now the most scandalous and controversial corruption case has been unearthed, which has been going on for years, actually, since the 1920s. Which is a Port Barrel issue. But on the other hand, the decades of neglect are also effects already of embracing globalization policies. For instance, we give incentives to corporations, so foreign corporations that invest or actually just ravage our environment, like mining corporations, forestry corporations, and even fishing corporations and corporate agriculture. They just ravage the environment and leave behind nothing but traces of scandals and traces of man-made disasters. On the other hand, there is no reinvestment in any infrastructure that can make us adaptive to all these disasters that we are, all these hazards that we are facing. For instance, we also have fault lines, we have earthquakes, we are a volcanic country, and we have typhoons. So the Aquino government is now saying, oh, I'm putting in money, which is an extra, which is savings from the budget, into equipment that can detect super typhoons. But you should be doing that all along, because you are a country that is prone to typhoons. So what we're saying here now is that the unjust thing that is happening is that we are not producing global warming. We may be contributing to it, but we are not the number one contributor. And we are made to pay for the impact of climate change with our lives, with our crops, with our livelihood, and I don't know how many years it takes for us to rise again from this disaster. And yet when we are given funds for climate funding, we are made to follow certain conditionalities or even pay high interest for that. That is so unjust.
So you've made a very, very, very clear and passionate case here, which I think will both educate and disturb our audience. What can people do, though, just in terms – these obviously are huge issues that you and Anne are talking about. What can people do just immediately, Rosario, in terms of helping the situation that you are dealing with there in the Philippines?
Actually, we've heard already over the news that 22 countries have pledged aid support, and yet people are not seeing any shadow of that aid, because it has to go through the aid architecture that is both bureaucratic, that is also controlled by governments who have pledged that support. And yet the support that is really going through, all this support that's coming from ordinary people. So what we're seeing here is actually, well, again, if I may say, it's people power. It is people-to-people support. So what the Ibon Foundation has done is to set up a website or a center where people can just drop their support material and monetary, and then send it right away to our network NGOs as well, or network people's organizations that are based in Cebu, because Cebu is reachable now by through the banks or even through plane, you know, air transport. And then that NGO now will bring it in the best of its ability to Eastern Visayas. So that's what we are doing right now. We have set up a website. I enjoin people to go to our website, www.ibon.org. And there are other people's organizations that have set up relief centers, so it's sort of a people's initiative thing. instead of waiting for the government. And governments will have pledged, yes, thank you for the aid, but, you know, it's not really coming fast.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us from the Philippines, Rosario Guzman. And again, the website that you referred to is www.ebon.org. And Ebon is spelled I-B-O-N. A quick last word from you, Anne.
Well, I just want to mention that it's interesting that this typhoon hit immediately before the Warsaw Climate Conference. Last year, the middle of the climate conference was punctuated by a typhoon that hit the Philippines. The year before that, there was massive flooding that hit South Africa just before the Durban South Africa Climate Conference. So this is happening over and over and over again. And, you know, if it's not penetrating the brains of these UN delegates, then I think we need to start thinking about alternatives to the UN process, to this government process, and seeing the grassroots rising from the bottom to figure this out for ourselves.
Well, I thank both of you for joining us here today, Anne Peterman, the Executive Director of the Global Justice Ecology Project, and Rosario Guzman, a Research Associate with the Ebon Foundation in the Philippines, which works for climate justice and on environmental, agricultural, and economic issues. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with a member of the Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, who was trying to have their first meeting, which was interrupted by a posse of heavily armed Texans belonging to the Open Carry Texas organization.